John chapter 8, starting at verse 12. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The Pharisees challenged him, "Here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid." Jesus answered, "Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I come from or where I am going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are right, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law it is written that the testimony of two men is valid. I am one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me." Then they asked him, "Where is your Father?" "You do not know me or my Father," Jesus replied. "If you knew me, you would know my Father also." He spoke these words while teaching in the temple area, near the place where the offerings were put. Yet no one seized him, because his time had not yet come.
Well, I hope you like summer. I like summer. And I don't know about you, but I really like these long summer days, don't you? I love the fact that I can wake up and it'll be fresh. Sometimes the sun, our bedroom faces kind of east, and sometimes the blackout blind doesn't quite work and it wakes me just a little bit too early. But still, I like waking up on a summer morning and to find the sun already warm. And I really like sitting out in the garden late at night chatting. And I really like walking the dog kind of after 9 o'clock and find that it's still bright enough not to need the torch. I really like these long summer days. And if I'm honest with you, I really don't like the dark. That's the truth. Am I the only one that doesn't like the dark? I don't like the dark very much. But of course, dark is all around us in all sorts of scenarios. It's used as a device in some settings. I know I've commented on this before, but I still continue to be amused by Hollister, that shop. The designer clothes shop. I know there's one in Bath. I guess most of you will have seen that. There's its logo. Whatever you think about Hollister clothes, I have one real problem with Hollister. There's probably several problems with Hollister, but I have one real problem with Hollister, and that is that when you go into the shop, it's really dark. You ever been in there? Bizarre. Combined with price labels that tell me that not that the clothes are for men and women, but for guys and girls, which is always slightly confusing, I sometimes wonder if it's dark to hide how expensive the clothes are. And on the odd occasion, because it's really difficult to find the price, and on the odd occasions that I've been in, I've wondered what they would think if I brought one of those million candle power torches with me. I'd love to do it. Has anybody done that? I'd love to do that. I'm sure someone wants to have done it. So you go into this dark shop with the prices and you just switch the light on and suddenly you discover that actually it's not been decorated very well and that the dark is just to save them money. And then suddenly everyone will be able to see what they're doing. I don't like the dark. And it's not just me. We like light, don't we? As human beings, we don't find it easy to be in the dark. We like light and we need light. And when we don't have light, we find that we can't operate properly. We can't see what it is we're doing. Now, I'm very happy from a scientific level to describe to you what light is in terms of electromagnetic waves, or we can talk about photons. In fact, there's someone at the back who... Oh, no, she's not here. I was going to say, there's someone at the back who could explain in more detail than I could what's going on in terms of that that science. But when we talk about light, we don't just mean light in a scientific sense, do we? We talk about it figuratively as well. So, for example, in cartoons, someone having a bright idea is shown as having a light bulb over their head. Suddenly their brain has been illuminated by a bright idea. We know what that is like. And we talk about being enlightened, by which we mean that someone has a fuller understanding or a fuller picture of what's going on so they can make a better decision. Or when you look at celebrities whose behavior just seems to be completely awful, well, that's, we would say, is because they've been kept in the dark about what the normal world is like and normal behavior is like. In world history, one of the key problems that leads dictators to make devastating decisions is that they're often kept in the dark about world events and see things only ever from one perspective, their perspective. And no one ever dares to give them the light of another point of view. The absence of light, being in the dark, is a really dangerous place to be, both literally, physically, and also figuratively. And actually, that's one of the reasons I'm a Christian. Because we're not in the dark. I genuinely do believe the words of the Lord Jesus that Val read a few moments ago from John chapter 12. Just look at verse 12 with me again, will you? When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Do you know, you can philosophically, but also practically, you can dine out on that and the implications of what he said. That is, I'm a Christian because I firmly believe that following Jesus, by which the Bible explains, means taking what he says seriously, trusting what he's done for me on the dying on the cross and rising again from the dead, taking what he said in terms of life and the universe and everything, applying the implications of knowing him to life. In following Jesus, everything is illuminated that I need. He alone is the one I need to know for what is right and wrong. He alone is the one who will show me how to get the rest of life in perspective, to really know God. We saw last week, didn't we, that claim from John chapter 14, where he says, "He alone is the way, the truth, and the life to knowing God. He alone is the light of the world." If I want to know what real living is about, then I look at what his words are, and I can find practical application. For example, we're not going to do it for sake of time this morning, but we could turn to the beginning of Matthew's Gospel, in Matthew chapter 5 to 7. We've got the Sermon on the Mount. He just talks through, actually, the implications, the practical implications of the Ten Commandments, as it were, in a New Testament light. And he says, look, this is the culture of the kingdom. This is what it means to know me. This is how you apply my word to your life. This is how you live. Imagine having none of that. We live in a world, in a Judeo-Christian culture, as we like to call it in the West, where actually the implications of knowing him are all around us, and people are so used to them that they pretend they're not there. I was looking at a video by a historian called Tom Holland the other day, who had come from being a kind of atheist agnostic, where he said, "Oh, there probably isn't a God, and what does it matter even if there is?" And he's come to faith in Christ, or at least come to recognize the legitimacy of faith in Christ. Why? He said, because looking at the way our world is and all the things that I see and take for granted of rights and civility and democracy and freedom and respect for persons and so on, actually, I don't see any of that in Roman culture. I don't see any of that in Greek culture. I don't see any of that in medieval culture. In fact, the only answers that I can give for it are when I open the Bible of all books and see what Jesus has said. And suddenly I see the implications have run throughout history, and the civilization that we now enjoy and struggle with but enjoy comes actually from Jesus. Look again at the words. "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness but will have the light of life." He is the light of the world. The problem is that sounds like a really arrogant thing for him to say in isolation, doesn't it? I mean, of all the things that people could say, that he is the light of the world. And the religious leaders of his time certainly thought that it was an arrogant thing to say. They knew, you see, the implications of, at least some of the implications of what he was saying. The whole theme of light and life, that is, of how light illuminates and therefore allows life to thrive, is a major theme all the way through the Bible. Let's just scoot around just for a minute. No need to turn to these if you don't want to, but you're very welcome to. Just the opening chapters of the Bible, the opening words of the Bible, start with like this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the water. So you can hear the drums rolling as Hollywood gets to work. And what's the very first thing he says? And God said, and therefore it happened, because his word makes things happen. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And everything else follows from there. God saw the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness, and he called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening and morning the first day. The very first thing he created on that first day was light itself, and everything else ran from there. Without light, none of the rest of it would have happened. But because of light, with light, he illuminated the scene. We could scoot all the way through. Let me just pick up one of the Psalms, Psalm 27. I read about light, walking in the light of God in Psalm 89 this morning. But let me start with the words of Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Psalm 119, right in the middle, verse 105, talking about the things that God says, the Bible. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. The multiple prophets in the Old Testament talk about people who were far away from God, having no light and needing light to bring them back. For example, we saw in Isaiah a few weeks ago, the Lord said of the promised rescuer that he was going to send in Isaiah 49. Don't turn to it, I'll just read it. He says, it is too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept. I will also make you a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. That same prophet talked about the hope of the world being the coming of God's glory, which is described as light in Isaiah chapter 60. And right at the very end of the Bible, in Revelation 21, the whole hope that God promises him put in terms of being a light for the nations. And then just focusing in on John's gospel that we're looking at this morning, all the way through John's gospel, there are multiple occasions where Jesus has taken what Jesus has said is variously taken as being described as light. Let me read to you from John chapter 1. Maybe you would like to turn to this one, page 748. Where John starts his gospel account with these words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning. Through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life, here it comes, was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it or overcome it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. Can you see how this is being framed up in the Bible now? The implications of how important it is to have Jesus, the light. He said to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, just turn the page over, verse 19. This is the verdict, John 3:19, in his conversation with Nicodemus, following, telling him you must be born again, telling him God so loved the world, he sent his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Verse 16, verse 17. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict, verse 19. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light, because their deeds were evil. chapter 9 of John. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Same as he said in chapter 8, our passage, and also in chapter 12. What's going on here as Jesus declares, I am the light of the world? Well, what's going on is he's taking the whole weight of the Bible's message for the religious elite who would have known their Bibles, and he's bringing the whole lot to bear on himself and saying, you know all this stuff that the Bible said about light? I've arrived. That's what he's saying. I've arrived. There is no ambiguity in what Jesus was saying. He knew very well what he was claiming. And what he was claiming, quite deliberately, that knowing him means having real light to live by, to die by, and then to live in forever. That is quite a claim, isn't it? To say that he is the light of the world. You know, people all over our world look for light in all sorts of other directions, be it other religions, be it their career, be it family, be it possessions, be it philosophies. Probably the most bizarre one that I have read most recently is a headline this morning. You may have heard in Egypt, they found a hidden black sarcophagus in a historical archaeological dig in Egypt, and they found it a week or two ago. Have you seen this on the news? A great marble, black marble sarcophagus. And just this week, drama of dramas, they've opened it. It's headline news. Black sarcophagus has been opened. What's inside? Well, they've opened a 2,000-year-old coffin. What do you expect to be inside? Bones. That's what's inside. In fact, a collection of bones. Maybe a couple of warriors in there, they reckon. Maybe it's the bones of Alexander the Great. But it's not just that. There's some other mush in there. I won't spoil your lunch by describing. And there's a red, dark red liquid. Now, the thing about the dark red liquid is this sarcophagus has been buried near a sewage drain for quite a long time. But because of the drama around the sarcophagus and because of the fear of the curse and all the rest of it, our newspapers are reporting this morning that thousands of people have signed up a petition to drink some of the red liquid. Maybe in a carbonated drink. Why? Well, so that they will avoid the curse or get luck or whatever it is. To us sitting here in Chippenham, that sounds like they're all nuts. But is it any more nuts than looking for answers to life, the universe and everything, to life and death in land or career or relationship? Really? People long for light to live by, real lasting light to live by. And Jesus is that. And he is light to live forever in. They knew that's what he was claiming, so they challenged him. Verse 13 of our passage, back on page 755, the Pharisees challenged him. Here you are, appearing as your own witness, but your testimony is not valid. Jesus answered, even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I come from and where I am going. You have no idea where I come from, where I am going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. You see, they're saying, who do you think you are making a claim like that? You brought the whole weight of the Bible's teaching on light and you're applying it to yourself. You can't make claims like that. He says, I can. I can make a claim like that because only light can authenticate itself. See, they were only judging by human standards. That is, they were only looking with the simple perspective of someone who makes claim about themselves. It needs to be authenticated by someone else. Let me illustrate it for you. If I said to you, I am a linguist, my wife will now laugh. You could very quickly test me to find out whether or not what I said was true, because you'd ask me what language I claim to speak other than English. And if you were an expert in that language, we could try and have a conversation and you'd very quickly discover that I wasn't a linguist. I could claim to be Prime Minister this morning, couldn't I? Apparently lots of people are interested in that. But you could test that too. And you could prove whether or not it was true. It'd be a tough job to do just at the moment, but still, it would be testable. If I went really crazy, I could say I'm an orange. And you could test it to prove it to be false, couldn't you? You could, in other words, whatever I were to claim about me or you were to claim about you, we could authenticate by test. In the orange test, I suppose squeezing would probably work, I don't know. And so on, you can check these sorts of claims whether or not they're true. But he wasn't doing that. He wasn't simply making a claim about ordinary things that can be solved with a quick test. He was claiming to be the light. In fact, he was saying that without him, you really can't test anything else because you won't be able to illuminate anything else or see anything else. He is claiming to be the one who has always been promised and will have and who will bring real illumination to human existence. That's quite a claim. And it's either true or it's false. But actually, you see, it's no more of a claim than saying that he is the Son of God. The great and very famous Christian writer, C.S. Lewis, in his book, Mere Christianity, famously said this. I think we've got it on. No, it's the previous one. One click, not two. Go back one. Can we go back one? We don't want Plato yet. Now you know there's a Plato quote coming. There we are. C.S. Lewis. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about this being a great human teacher. He has not left that option open to us. And as if to prove that point, Jesus goes on to tell them in verses 16 to 19 of our passage that if you take the testimony of two people, then actually you can boil it down to a simple law trial. Now, of course, this isn't a simple law trial, but if it were, then you would have two testimonies according to their law, and you'd be able to condemn him on that basis, or release him on that basis. He says, look, you have two testimonies. You have mine, and you have my father's. Of course, in our culture, we'd immediately talk about, but you can't have the testimony of a relative and so on. Avoid that point for a minute. He's making a broader point. For him to say that you have my father's testimony was a major, major thing for him to say. He's just claimed to be the light of the world, and therefore his father must be God himself. Here's a guy who claims to be the light of the world, the one who illuminates everything, and that he can do because he is the Son of God. We need to get our heads around that for a moment, because this is full of implications if it's true. And as we do that, let me tell you that Christians both believe him and know that what he says is true from our own experience. At which point, if you're not a Christian this morning, you've immediately said that all Christians are lunatics, along with him. But before you dismiss us, let me explain why. All of us know that the world is a really messy, scary place, with loads and loads of uncertainties and loads of stuff that just doesn't seem to be either fair or just. If you haven't discovered that yet in the world, frankly, it's only a matter of time. You just haven't lived long enough yet. You will. But when we read the Bible, and when we use that to illuminate our understanding, to light up the world around us, to describe to us why it's broken, how things are right and wrong, what is right and wrong, what is the hope, where are the answers, who we can trust in. Actually, as soon as we do that, the world starts to make sense. There's loads of negative publicity about what Christians believe and the ways we apparently can or can't do things and the things we apparently can campaign against and that we're not very politically correct or so on. But actually, when you look properly at the Bible and what Jesus says, and don't take it out of context like the media does in a soundbite, actually it works. What Jesus says about family works. What Jesus says about history is true. What Jesus says about how to live and truth works. actually what Jesus says about himself and hope and faith and the future and sin and judgment and hell. It works. You see, because he judges in a different way. I'm sorry to remind the young people that you've just had exams, most of you, haven't you? Some of the little ones have had tests and they've got the results. Some of the bigger ones have just had exams and they're waiting for results. Those days are coming. I hate to, well, I won't say any more about it, but you know that the days are coming and you're trying not to think about it, I'm sure. But in those exams, the idea was, whether or not it applies, we'll find out in the next few weeks from the exam board's results. But still, the idea was that you're tested according to a standard that is fixed. There is an absolute measure, and they're seeing how far you are up that absolute measure. They're testing you against things that don't change, by which the truth of how you got on in that exam is illuminated. So if you manage to get so many marks, then it will show in the exam that you got that many marks. If you did really, really well, then the exam will show that you've done really, really well, and so on. The absolute standard will illuminate your ability to pass exams or not. We need that kind of illumination. We need those absolute standards. Now's the moment for the Plato quote. It was Plato, the Greek philosopher, who said, "We can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark, but the real tragedy in life is when men are afraid of the light." Can you see that? That there are absolute standards against which everything else is measured. What happens in our world? We say, "I don't want this kind of absolute standards, thank you very much. I'm happy to be my own standard." But if you're your standard and he's his standard, and do you know what? What happens truly is that men are afraid of that kind of light. They're afraid of the dark. They're afraid of the light. Plato didn't know Jesus. But the Bible works exactly as in that description. It takes real courage to use those absolutes, to be willing to see the world in terms of the one who made it. But without such unchangeable certain things, how can anyone possibly make sense of the world? Without those absolutes of right and wrong, without actually the light of the gospel, how can you make sense of the world? The Bible describes my feelings and my reactions and my attitudes and my appetites really accurately. And it also describes why they are as they are and how I deal with them. That's why the Ten Commandments are all about. They are that measuring rod, that absolute standard against which we measure ourselves. The Apostle Paul, writing to the Roman Christians, says they're there for us to be a measuring rod against which we can judge ourselves and know how far we've failed. It does the same for the world around me. The Bible, it explains what's happening on the international stage and what God's plan is. Actually, the whole Bible is a handbook for life, and it points to the rescuer who came to save us from our failure and to follow the Maker's instructions. And it describes to me that God, who is all-powerful and who is offended at my rebellious heart and thinking, and who could destroy me in a word, it describes to me the one who will judge one day with absolute justice everything. But that now, instead of doing that, he has set his love upon me and sent his son to illuminate the world and die on a cross and take the place that I deserve. So the very last part of our passage in John 8 this morning kind of pulls all that together. You see, it says that even though Jesus was teaching all this stuff right in the heart of the temple, right at the heart of the religious head of these people's, for some of them, false worship of God. And an onlooker might simply have expected that he'd be stopped and seized. Look at verse 20. He's just made all these claims about being the light of the world. He's just made all these claims about God being his father. He's just told them that actually they need to see the global, the eternal perspective. But they don't know it. Verse 20. He spoke these words while teaching in the temple area, near the place where the offerings were put. That's significant. The offerings are significant because he fulfills those offerings. So why didn't they seize him? Well, yet no one seized him because his time had not yet come. Jesus is the light of the world. He came to illuminate the world and thereby to draw people into relationship with God. That's where his authority came from. He is in control. And when his time finally did come, John describes how he died on a cross to take the punishment we deserve and how he rose from the dead, proving the plan had worked, and how he gives hope and life for everyone who will put their faith in him. But right now, those who believe are asking, as they hear him, standing, listening, and maybe as we look on, we're asking, am I walking in light or still in darkness? And actually, that's what this passage kind of causes us to say. Am I walking in light or still in darkness? Do I know the light of the world? And if I do, is my life being illuminated gladly by him? Do I measure myself against this precious book? Do I judge? Do I take his judgment? Am I applying his light to my life? Or am I too afraid to do that? Well, my prayer is that we would all know Jesus and to be the light of the world, and that our lives would be illuminated by him.